welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, my good friend Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I wanted to talk about the businesses that have been boycotting Russia. And in many instances, there are people who said these businesses were slow in boycotting Russia and the impact that the business community has had in pulling out of Russia. Maybe some of us didn't realize just how big of partnerships there were with businesses in Russia, American businesses.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of them like Kentucky Fried Chicken and McDonald's and others. I mean, the nutritionists in Russia probably applauded that, the fact that they pulled out. But, they had many, many locations there and big business going on, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, all those things that are staples. Furthermore, Ford Motor Company has a big assembly plant there. I think they suspended operations. It had to have a big impact on employment. These people, to anyone who has 600 or 700 locations, has accounts for thousands of employees, and the same is true with the automobile assembly plant. So, if only affecting the level of employment in Russia was a big factor, but also. Russia's response to it was, we'll simply take it over. But I'm not sure how Russia takes over Ford Motor Company's plant and builds Fords there. I don't know what they would build. And Ford Motor is Russia going to take over the KFC outlets? And what are they going to do with it? Are they going to produce Russian fried chicken? I mean, it created a serious problem for Russia's economy. And so I'm sure that has put pressure on and suffering to the Russian people. That's what I point out, that the economic sanctions are really aimed at the people. And then the people are expected to turn around and exert an influence on the government that will have an effect. And my question is that, if this was a democratic country, you could say, yeah, that's definitely going to happen. But it isn't really a democratic country, and what we're doing is pushing Putin into a corner to make him more and more desperate. And that's one of the problems with autocracies. And instead of evaluating the country's psyche and the country's kind of outlook, we have to do a psychoanalytical analysis of someone like Putin. So it causes us to say, is this guy taking steroids? Is this a steroid rage problem? I mean, we get into something which demonstrates the extent to which we're dealing with a personality here and not a nation in terms of the way we have to strategically handle it. And that's so, really the same kind of circumstance. That's the same circumstance we had going when Donald Trump was president. Trump was trying to make it a cult of a personality such that the rest of the world was forced to analyze, what will Donald Trump think of this?
Sandy, when you really take the time out to really think this thing over, and while these businesses have shut down, you're right, many of the Russian people have been laid off, not knowing when they're coming back. The impact of those layoffs are going to be tremendous to them. They had nothing to do with this, and I don't think there's going to be crocodile tears cried for the Russian people. Even though they had nothing to do with this.
Yeah, I mean, in many respects, the people of Russia are certainly as innocent as the people of Ukraine in terms of the extent to which they become victims in this war. The Russian military members don't call the shots for their foreign policy, so the people whose lives are being put into the field of action are essentially victims, just the way American military have been victims in Vietnam and elsewhere. So, the situation in Russia is quite dire. The ruble has collapsed. It used to be 60 rubles to the dollar. Now it's 133. What does that mean? It means that everything that is imported into Russia has doubled in price. That's a very substantial inflation. And all of that doubling in price has an impact as well on everything else, plus the fact they have a shortage of food and staples, so that the Russian people are not only experiencing all these layoffs, but they're also experiencing a huge run-up in price, such that they're all between a rock and a hard spot economically. And we can say, well, that's good. And in the short term, if we get this thing over, this will have been a short-term issue, but it won't be a short-term issue in their economy, just like the inflation in our economy. We hope it's short term, but there is a danger that that this conflict and the inflation that it's going to stimulate on top of the inflation we're already suffering could create a long term problem.
You know, Sandy, the more you think about this, especially from the other side of the equation, and so what can the Russian people do other than, you know, we're kind of sending the message to them, Putin is your guy, you fix him. You know, you citizens of Russia, you take care of him and then you'll be all right. I mean, that's basically what the sanctions are saying, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's definitely what sanctions are designed to do. Because if you think about it, that's all they can be designed to do. But, you know, Putin has for a number of years now been securing a power which is more and more immune from that kind of pressure. We've got Navalny in prison, his main opposition. We've got people who are going to the streets to protest in Russia. We don't know what's stimulating them, but many of them are being jailed. We have the laws being changed to create a much more sort of martial law kind of approach to public opinion in Russia. So it's not going to be... Putin has made it more and more difficult for the Russian people to secure a change. Furthermore, he's conducting and the view of the Russian people has been polarized with respect to America, because who do they have? They have two people to blame for the problems they're experiencing. The first party they have to blame is Putin, their local leader. And then the second party they have to blame is America and NATO for the response to what Russia has done. So they can blame Putin for what Russia's done. They can decide that Putin's story about why he did it is true, and that Russia was a victim of pressure from the West that was existential in nature, that was maybe going to destroy the Russian nation. Putin has described himself as a savior of the Russian nation, and that therefore he and they, the Russians, are a victim of what's been perpetrated by the West. And many Russians will adopt that latter theory.
So, Sandy, let's pivot to the oil prices that, you know, for a couple of days seem to have stabilized. Can we hope that it'll be stable for a while, or is that just this a respite for a moment? Still $110 a barrel.
Yeah, it's a commodity, and the price at the pump is one of the first things to react to a shortage, because as soon as oil becomes short, the cost of that transfers into the cost of gasoline, and the cost of gasoline at the margin is what you end up paying at the pump. So, yeah, a number of people now who have SUVs are finding out they can spend $100 to fill a car with gasoline. That's shocking. I would point out, however, that the price of gas on a real dollar basis is about the same as it was in 1975. If you take the 1975 price of gas and inflate it by the consumer price index since then, you end up with a price of about $4.75. Cost of gas. So that's the price of gas at the pump. You end up. Go ahead.
Well, I'm sure people are not saying, well, what Sandy is saying is 100% accurate. You know, what you are stating are facts, but, you know, people have been getting gas for $2.80. And now all of a sudden, you know, it's where it is, and that's all they see.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's no comfort when prices double to say that, well, this is what the consumer price index would have the price be based on inflation, because, you know, we ended up with, very cheap gasoline in terms of historically cheap gasoline. We've had it going for the last decade or so. And now it's catching up with us in terms of the impact of that. You know, there are the environmentalists are probably pleased because it's going to accelerate the rate at which people consider electric cars to transfer their allegiance in terms of transportation use for electric cars rather than gasoline cars. But
so the prices, the hardship. Well, then will the prices reflect? They'll certainly go up for electrical cars as people demand them more.
It could be. I mean, price of cars has more or less risen with the CPI, and there is so much competition in the automobile market that I don't believe that once the shortage of cars is eliminated. Right now, there's a shortage of cars, which is artificial as the result of two things. One, the problems at the ports with respect to having the necessary dock workers to load and unload boats. And secondly, and maybe most importantly, the shortage of chips, the computer chips, which are required to make automobiles, so that automobile manufacturers are not able to make the number of cars that they should to fill demand. And then once they're made, they have trouble getting them to market. So there's a shortage, and it's causing a huge run-up in price of used cars and a shortage of new cars. But once that shortage is solved, and history tells us that manufacturers, as soon as they can manufacture enough, will not only manufacture enough, they'll probably manufacture too many and create a surplus. So I don't expect electric cars to run up in price because more people want them, so long as we don't have artificial blockages, bottlenecks in either transportation or supply of goods.
You know, many, many decades ago when we had the problems again with the cost of the barrels of oil, and I do remember even way back then, I think they reached $100 or more a barrel. You know, the auto industry was able to pare down the sizes of our vehicles and make them lighter, and so that was... That was the answer to that back then. Hang on, Sandy. We've got to go to another break. 844-967-2789. Sure. We'll be right back.